Good morning, and welcome to Enlightened Radio, www.enlightenedradio.org, and our player is at player.enlightenedradio.org. And this morning's Winners and Losers radio program, a continuation of the Spirit of Shepherdstown discussions we've been having with co-host Karen Valentine and myself. I'm John Case. And this program starts right up. It's broadcast regularly at 7 a.m. on Friday mornings. And here's the latest. Then again, I ain't never been a jealous kid. All right, that's the real recorder.
Are we back? Is it just you and me, or is the bot infiltrating us again?
The bot's gone.
Okay, good.
The bot's gone. just get used to it, though. There's going to be more and more of them.
I know. Back to your itchy dog. I have a client, a doggy client, who every time I walk her, she is allergic to grass, so I have to wash her feet in a bucket of warm water and wash her belly and dry her every time she gets walked.
That's what Carol's been doing the last week or two. She's, because she'll start licking her feet, right?
You know, yeah.
In addition,
yeah, it's a thing. Tell Carol she's not crazy.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, it's been a month now where it's been sort of on and off. I mean, she gets chewing on herself, and then, you know, we have to give her the antibiotic, and then it gets better. It does get better, but you can't keep on antibiotics all the time.
No. And it's got to be uncomfortable. I mean, when I gnaw on myself, it tends to get irritated.
Right. That's right. What are you doing to your feet, Karen?
Yeah. Just sucking on my toes over here.
Really? Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Well, it's been a really it's an interesting weather pattern. I mean, it's like glorious. It's been chilly here. I'm in Delaware, by the way. I arrived in Delaware early. On Wednesday morning, I left Shepherdstown at 4 a.m. and arrived here for a dog sit with my dear Stella Golden Retriever that is here by my feet. And I'm here for a week, and it is quite chilly here. Like yesterday, it was only 67.
It's going to get hotter.
Oh, it will get hotter.
Oh, yeah. Come on. I mean, it's that nice sort of brisk blue. It's the same here. It's very nice, but it's a little chilly this morning.
Yeah, but it's lovely. And, I'm always grateful for whatever weather we have, because there's something about being by the seashore that it's all kind of magical. The wind, the rain, the sun, it all brings with it kind of different reflections, if you will.
We're on the mountain here. Even though I look like I'm at the beach, I just like,
yeah, it's always sunny where you are.
That's right. That palm tree back there. This is DeSantis country, or down here where, we're going to ban all kinds of gender education and racial education. And we just can't have any of that. That's just, we got to go back to John Wayne. Now, he had it all right.
Mm-hmm. Your libraries are going to be filled with National Enquirers. That's all.
Really, I know. I mean, that's the old kind of pornography, you know. But anyway, we have to. I don't know what the priests are going to do. I mean, how are they going to obey these rules? They've shown themselves to be able to manage their vows. Okay.
Well, you know,
there
was a pretty interesting interview yesterday. I saw it with Pope Francis.
I
like him a lot, and I think he's really you know, he's challenging his entire, you know, sect to look inward and to really be what we've talked about a lot on our Spirit of Shepherdstown series, to actually be more Jesus-like. You know, let's get down to the basics here, you know, and a lot of what is being pushed as Christianity is certainly not Jesus-like. And I think that's going to be a continuing struggle. And, you know, I know my pastor here, who everyone will get to meet, the pastor that came into my life here in Delaware, she is just a magician at walking the line between spirituality and politics. So I really look forward to you all meeting her.
There was a way to reach across the divides.
Yes. Yes. And she will be joining us sometime in June, as will my, probably one of my favorite spiritual leaders in my practice with Buddhism. I've always loved the teachings and writings of Thich Nhat Hanh, you know, but I do practice with a Buddhist, and his name is Bhante Sujatha, and he is the leader of the Lotus Temple in Chicago. And I am working with his PR person to have him join us one morning via Zoom.
A local American Buddhist gathering. It was it either in or near Shepherdstown. There used to be a couple of members of Quaker Meeting before it became an official Quaker Meeting. And the minute they came an official Quaker Meeting, these two, they were both women. They didn't want any part of it. So they went off to the American Buddhist group. And I believe it was based in Shepherdstown.
There are certain spinoff groups. As far as in Shepherdstown, Nan and Marty Broadhurst have always had a group of, it's called Buddha Buddies. And
maybe that's what it is, because they also are affiliated with, one of them was affiliated with the Quakers in Frederick too for a long time.
Right. Yeah. And they revolve theirs around like a book club. So it would be a book written by a Buddhist or based on Buddhism. And they would hold meetings. So Nan and Marty really have been, as far as in our community. And I know since Marty's passing, Nan is still holding groups herself. And I know Buddhism has helped her through a lot of her struggles and losing Marty and all of that. So, and it's become more and more important in my life. And I thought it was, based on the week I had last week, I get a morning coffee with Bhante Sujatha every morning. He sends to all of his people, you know, a quote and a beautiful picture. And this morning's was so apropos. It says, conquer the angry through restraint, conquer the wicked by goodness, conquer the stingy by generosity, and the liar by speaking the truth. And that kind of just summed up my world right now.
Right.
And it's just amazing how spirituality touches you. And I've been so fortunate that the Christian pastors and priests that are in my life have embraced, like, none of them have a problem with, you know, my practicing Buddhism as well. And I think that is one way we are moving forward in religion and spirituality, is many people are becoming more open to kind of morphing different religions, if you will. Yeah, that work for you. You know, it's not as one track, you know, and it's really been difficult for me as a little Catholic girl, because that little Catholic girl, when you're 12 years Catholic school, and that's hard to get out of you. It's a little fairy or angel or devil that lives inside of you. And it's hard to have that go away. So it's really been wonderful for me to have so many pastors and priests embrace that, that they're fine. You know, there is no right or wrong. And I love that Christianity, in the sense that I've experienced it in the past several years, is open to that. And it scares me when I see this hardcore right-wing Christianity, because it's just frightening. It's frighteningly closed-minded, and it does not, you know, encourage growth. It doesn't encourage open-mindedness, and I think that is the precise goal.
It's the original Confucian and Buddhist. I've been listening. Carol, both of them, I listened to these great courses that are now on Amazon, actually. And they used to be kind of hack, the popular kind of science, popular courses, you know, where what happened to all the aliens and where did they land and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And but now they've had really first class, both academically and presentation wise. I mean, these are really brilliant, you know, really expositions of the topics. And ancient China, or ancient Far East, that includes a lot more than China, Japan, Korea, Southeast Asia, the whole thing. The Buddhist and Confucian, probably the two biggest, Taoist, the other, none of them started out as envisioning the divine. The Buddha was not a god in the beginning, and neither was Confucius, and neither was the Taoist thing is more I don't remember the names of the thing, but again, and later when they became state religions at various points in history of the different countries, right? It was very important to assert that the leaders were divine, and some, or they became divine, okay? Mm-hmm. Because you have to define, what is the authority that the state has? Well, God appointed the emperor.
Right.
Or obviously, the Pope appointed this guy king.
Isn't it fascinating how history teaches us that we really need a division between church and state?
Yeah,
there's a reason for that.
Wait, otherwise, what about the rights of the people? Well, God determined this guy's good. Yeah, he's the one that set it up. You have to go to him. And how do you go to him? Well, the Pope is the connection, or, you know, so and so, some official. When I was in my completely atheistic phase, you know, the witch doctors of imperialism.
Mm-hmm.
Why is this war good? Well, the church says it's okay.
Right.
You know, when did Jesus do this, arming and, you know, Christian soldiers? When did he do that? Okay. No. Well, okay.
Well, and, you know, this all leads to, I struggle in this world between on a daily basis, just, you know, this past week being having some difficult moments, just the balance of my religion, my practice, my spirituality, and how that can keep me grounded in midst of the chaos of what's happening politically and sometimes personally. And then, you know, I kind of foreshadowed that I wanted to share something on this podcast this morning. I've actually been moved this week. I never knew what was going to move me to kind of share my story. And it does go back to the spirit of Shepherdstown, or the spirits of Shepherdstown. And for me this week, it was Tina Turner dying.
Right.
And she has no idea. And I think when we look at people that, you know, have fame in the spotlight, I think sometimes they don't have an idea how much they affect the common person. But Tina Turner was somebody who, you know, I grew up listening to her music, and I always thought she was like groovy as hell, right? And as a girl watching this powerful woman on stage, and then, you know, she discovered Buddhism. So
did she?
Oh yeah. She, after her suicide attempt, she turned to Buddhism and found Buddhism to be the place and the religion that helped her. And she honestly practiced until the end of her life. And so much of what she said about it, it resonated with me. And then I thought, you know, I am so blessed to have all of these avenues come together. And so I was thinking the other day, when Pastor Wendy, who is my pastor here in Delaware, when she comes on this podcast with us, how am I going to introduce her? How am I going to introduce her without at least telling my story a little bit? Because Pastor Wendy is a Christian Methodist pastor, and her little church was up the street from my house here in Delaware. And the way Pastor Wendy and I met was, she knocked on the door to make sure I was okay. And that was the strangest intervention, and I'm going to say divine intervention, that has ever happened to me. And I had only met her once. I had gone to church there one time pre-COVID, right before COVID, actually. And then I wasn't there, but I wasn't a member. You know, she only met me, like I said, one time. And months later, she knocked on my door. And I wasn't allowed to open the door. So here's the story with Pastor Wendy and I. I became ill with COVID in March of 2020. So I got sick on March 3rd. By the time, you know, I don't know if anybody knows anybody that was dealing with it there in the beginning, but it took weeks to get a COVID test. And then it took like 10 days to get the results. So it was actually on my middle daughter's birthday at 5 a.m, my phone rang. It was March 24th, 2020. And it was the Delaware State Health Department. And they said, you have tested positive for COVID. You're going to be monitored. You must stay at home. You're going to be getting information in the mail. You may not leave your house if there are people around, but you can leave to get your mail, to go to the mailbox. There will be people checking on you. We will monitor you every day. And lo and behold, I got a call every day from the state health department.
Wow.
These people became my avenue to the outside world, because that's all I had. And they were very strict about me leaving. Mm-hmm. The fire department would drive by and they would honk and, you know, yell out, do you need anything? I mean, it was very comforting, strange, all of the above. And I was really sick with COVID and did not get a positive or a negative COVID test until May. So it was March till May that I was in my house.
Right.
And of course, doctors were calling and all of that. So at the same time, I was I was trying, I had made a decision 2 months prior to COVID to sever a relationship that I was in. That was my, you know, the second husband in my world. And things had turned, it had taken a turn for the worse. And that decision was made 2 months prior to COVID. Then when I got COVID, I felt like the world just like knocked me in the head. I mean, when you talk about a whack-a-mole game, because it took me, it was the hardest decision to make to get this person once and for all out of my life. And then I got sick, and I got really sick. So it really took everything inside of me to live or to want to live. And I had read, I was reading Tina Turner's book and had read some things about her and her suicide attempt. I am one that never contemplated suicide, but there were times when I had COVID, I was okay if I was going to be taking my last breath, because what I was handling was so monumental.
Right.
And the abuse that I was suffering from a domestic abuser got worse, because anybody that knows anything about domestic violence, whenever the person that's being abused shows weakness, the abuser takes advantage of that. So of course I was physically weak. I was emotionally weak. I was mentally weak. So the abuse increased. So I was dealing with COVID and the and domestic abuse hand in hand. And honestly, Tina Turner's words that I was reading helped so much. The other person who has gotten me through so many hard times in my life is John Prine. And of course, on April 6th
That's right.
of 2020, while I was laying in bed sick with COVID, and I heard he died, it was like a part of me died.
Me too.
And I didn't know how to go on. And I was just trying to keep my brain engaged and filling myself with other people who had struggles. And Tina Turner was like a huge part of that, because she spoke so candidly about her domestic abuse. And I was far away from my daughters because they weren't allowed to visit me. Of course, we were talking on the phone, but I had shielded them from what was happening. And the shame of that, of being a feminist, of being a woman, a mother of three daughters, and quote unquote, allowing myself to be in this situation is the hardest part of domestic violence. And it's something that, you know, I still struggle with. It has brought the girls and I, you know, here we are, fast forward in 2023, we are so much closer. We've all healed. I mean, it's a beautiful story. It has a wonderful ending, but I wasn't sure I was going to live through it. And you never know what is going to trigger you. You know, Tina Turner dying this week was a trigger for me. And it was just like, gosh, you know, I don't know how to ever share my story because it's so intimate. And when I think about this series that we're doing on this podcast, The Spirit of Shepherdstown, it really... The Spirits of Shepherdstown, it's really been an impetus for me to start exploring, like, what am I supposed to do with this story? What am I supposed to do? And reaching out to Pastor Karen Valentine, Erskine Valentine, who joined us. And then subsequently, we had coffee last week, and she has turned out to be a wonderful friend. And it was almost like she knew something, and I was able to share some things with her, and we've just kind of gotten very close. And the biggest decision I had to make after I lived through what could have taken my life multiple times was the decision to move back to Shepherdstown, because that in and of itself was triggering. That in and of itself was a bit traumatizing. It was the hardest thing for my daughters because of my safety there. And I remember saying to them in one of our group conversations, if I lose my home, where I raised you, where I feel like our spirit lies, that we always come back to, if I lose that because of him, then he did conquer me. Then he did win. Because my abuser's words were always, I'm going to conquer you and destroy you so nobody else can have you.
Wow.
And so my decision to come back home was so personal. And now, even though it was everyone was fearful about it, my pastor, my therapist, my domestic violence group, everybody, we all definitely had fear around it. But it is also what propelled me into the next phase of healing and has now given us all so much strength. And my girls are so happy I'm back. We all had to get over that fear and find a way to not let fear win. And we've seen that in so many parallels across everything that's happening in the world, in our politics, in our warmongering, all of it. And when fear takes over, it's destructive. And so two steps back, when I was sick with COVID, Pastor Wendy knocked on my door. I was not allowed to talk to her face to face, so I talked to her through the door. And she said, the spirit came to me and said, you need help. Something's going on and you need to have the strength to talk to me. I want you to pick up the phone and call me. Here's my private number. And she put the card in the door that after she was 20 feet away, I was allowed to open the door and get the card. Mm-hmm. And that was the beginning of my spiritual relationship with my pastor here in Delaware. And I have been so blessed through hardship to have so many spiritual interventions. It's wonderfully inspiring. And I still have work to do. I'm still going to do something with this. I'm going to do something with this story. I was able to help a lot of women here in Delaware. I joined a group. I was able to go rescue women in the middle of the night. I immediately put my pain and recovery into action. But I got a little... I'm not going to criticize myself. I don't know if I did it too soon. I got a little burnt out and I felt like I was constantly in a trauma state. So I just needed some downtime. And so when I got back to Shepherdstown, I was provided that. I still didn't know how I was going to make it, you know, as with many women or men who go through domestic abuse, you lose everything. You know, you lose... You're rebuilding all parts of your life when you finally get out of it. And my very first, the day I drove out of Delaware, I had most everything I needed in my car. And I was too shameful to face Shepherdstown yet. I wasn't there. So I drove from Delaware to Albuquerque. With my dog, and stayed with a friend from high school. She's been a lifelong friend. And I knew I needed just to plant myself somewhere that wasn't familiar to really kind of put my head back together. So I spent about 2 months on the road, and it's sobering at best, but what happened to me is every day I was filled with so much gratitude to be alive. I didn't have bruises. I didn't have threats. I didn't have sexual abuse. I didn't have a gun pointed to my head. I didn't have any of those things that kept me in a continual state of severe pain and stress. And I found at every turn that people are so much more receptive and supportive than we ever think they are. Like every situation I went into, I had to deal with the shame. You know, when I had to meet my doctor up in Wilmington, Delaware, because I had an injury that was so severe that I had to have surgery for, and the shame of having to talk to him. And, you know, here's a doctor that I didn't know. And he took my hands. He's like, it's you and every 10th woman that walks through my door. Some of them wear diamonds and pearls, all walks of life. I'm going to tell you, it is an epidemic. And like everyone was so kind and supportive of my personal hell that I thought was just me. You know, you're convinced it's your fault somehow. All of the classic feelings that come with that type of shame, it just bombard you. And when you have lived with someone that whose goal was to conquer you and destroy you, it's you know, you don't have any footing beneath you. So this week, I had literally just heard that Tina Turner died, who I already shared, kind of helped me more than she'll ever know, because obviously I didn't get to pick up the phone and call her and thank her. But it's so important to share stories. And I was sitting here hearing that Tina Turner died, and then I'm doing some housekeeping every time I'm in Delaware, kind of finishing up some life things here because I've moved back to Shepherdstown, and I had to go into my password book to get into one of my accounts.
Old password, yes.
And this was an account that I had created during the time that I had COVID. And the password that I created for this specific account was Get Out Alive 2020. And it sent chills up my spine. And it was almost 3 years to the day that this account was set up. And I'm thinking, here I am in May of 2023. And if anybody would have asked me in May of 2020, if I wanted to be alive, if I thought I was going to be alive, or what my life was going to look like, I don't know what my answer would have been, but it wouldn't have been this. I am experiencing tremendous joy. I have been blessed with so much healing, and the kids, my daughters, have been along for the journey. We have literally grown so much closer, and it's helped them with their anxieties and any, you know, struggles they have. And it is my spiritual community. It's the Buddhism and Bhante and Pastor Wendy, and then you know, inviting me back to the podcast, and you know, Jan talking about our community in Shepherdstown, I feel like I'm back home. You know, I didn't let him destroy that. And it's just, it's been beautiful. And I have an amazing job that I love. And I've got all of these great people in life that, you know, don't know my story. They just sometimes scratch their head like, huh, you go back and forth between here and West Virginia, you watch dogs. Huh, she's kind of interesting. She does a lot. She's funny. Like I'm well loved. I provide a wonderful service, and I mostly just have to deal with animals.
Oh, you are. I mean, my main connection with Shepherdstown these days is probably the folly, you know, but
yeah,
because I hang out over there a little bit, but you're famous there, so and well loved, and your abuser was not popular at all there, so I never understood it at the time. Now I, I'm here. But anyway, it's, I'm glad you've been able to, you know, to put the narrative together, Karen. Cause I don't, if you can tell the story, then, you can show that there's a passage through to not just yourself, but to others as well.
And that's exactly
like this. I always want to ask, though, because there's a crime been committed, it sounds like. And but the courts don't handle this crime very well. I'm not sure that they because they're set up as an adversarial match, right? How do you find the truth of some contest? Okay, well, you subject everybody to some
torture,
examination, whatever, you know, some. And
well, John, I'm glad that you brought that up, because there is another person that I have reached out to about being on our podcast, and she is the attorney that guided me through a lot of this. And she is somebody that believes in justice reform. She is well aware that our system does not handle many things well. And crimes against women are one of them, whether it be a rape, whether it be domestic violence, whether we're just not good at that. And because some of the abuse was also against one of my daughters, was involved, we honestly did kind of a makeshift trial. She told me what it was going to be like, what my daughter and myself would be subjected to, how long it would take realistically. And she did the hard work of putting that reality right in front of me, and almost a mock trial that she said, you know, you have to ask yourself, is that something that you can go through, you want to go through, that your daughter can handle? Did we really, was that part of our healing? And to this day, and probably forever, it will haunt me to not have judicial accountability, legal, lawful accountability. But we ultimately made the decision of no. I mean, that amount of stress,
yeah,
I was not sure that I would physically lived through it. So it was a family decision. We talked about it a lot. She was amazing. I was able to very easily get a 2-year protection from abuse order. They're called PFAs here in Delaware, that does travel across state lines and has been registered in West Virginia as well. which is expiring this June. And I'm okay with that. I mean, it was the longest and strongest PFA that could be issued. I feel like I've done what I could. I feel like the last litigious step could have put me over the edge. And we were all worried about that. And at the end of the day, my personal justice is that I'm alive and well and living my life. And I don't know if you've ever watched the movie about Tina Turner. It's when she sat.
I'm very familiar with her story.
Where she said, "I just want my name. I just want my name," and she left everything else behind.
She did.
And you know, from the outside looking in, it's hard. And for me, it's hard not to fight for justice, and it's hard to feel like I would have some part in whoever the next victim is going to be. But all I can do, I literally pray about that every day. Mm-hmm. And it's a really important question to raise. But our system has not caught up emotionally, intellectually, psychologically with what a trial like that does to a person.
I'm not sure that the trial, it's not clear to me that, I don't know what the alternative, the alternative is that, you know, somebody's brother goes and kills somebody. Okay. That kind of thing. It used to happen.
Trust me, back to John Wayne, right? We're going full circle.
Yeah, well, do you remember, matter of fact, Pat Buchanan, you remember that character?
Oh, sure.
And I remember when he was running for president.
A good solid Christian, right?
Well, you know, he was never bashful about the kind of Christianity he was in favor of. So, I mean, or it's political. I mean, he was actually fairly straightforward for a little baby Nazi kind of thing. But anyway, I remember that there was a debate then about abortion, as usual, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what about, and the Republican candidates were all being asked by one of the journalists about what about in the case of rape, you know, does the woman have a right to abortion? And they asked, and all the candidates except Buchanan, they danced around it. You know, but Buchanan came right out and said, why don't we just kill the guy? That was his answer.
Yeah.
Well, you know, remember when the woman who was asking him the question, who I think the reporter, I think she had been a victim at some point. She reacted emotionally to what he said.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell that she said, yeah. I mean, you know, but, you know, that wasn't what she was expecting. But, I mean, it shows you, it's an admission that the court system,
right,
it's not handling it, and you can't tell whether it's getting worse or better. I think it gets worse when the overall society starts to degrade. I mean, where's the moral foundation of this society now? I challenge anybody to tell me what that is that anybody. Mm-hmm. Ever seen.
I remember years ago having a kind of over dinner debate. Conversation with dear friends of mine who are both attorneys, and just one thing I couldn't wrap my head around is how anybody is like a court appointed attorney. I would be so terrible at that. Like, how do you defend somebody who you know is so guilty? And it just was always so perplexing to me. how that is done. And, you know, it would have been the same thing in a trial that we would have been on the other side of. How can this, you know, attorney that would have been hired on the opposite side like totally take you and, I mean, drag you across, you know, just hot coals and, you know, with cayenne pepper and, you know, everything else. So it's barbaric.
It is. And I don't, you know, ultimately, really, I mean, the key to this is the freedom is the economic and protective freedom to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Without, you know, to the consequences of that. I mean, because it's not possible for a lot of women to do. Or it's very difficult. I mean, it's always sort of possible, right? You know, like the Tina Turner story, throw everything up, you know, everything's gone, abandon everything except your safety. And
I'll tell you a statistic. On average, it takes 7 attempts to leave, to finally do it. And my first attempt, I was sleeping in my car with my dog for over a week in an undisclosed state, in an undisclosed location, in an undisclosed parking lot of a hotel, to be somewhere that was anonymous and to just try to have some peace of mind and honestly to get some sleep. And that was my first attempt. And so it took me 3. And, you know, I like when I get asked the hard questions. Not the story is not many people know it, but you do get asked, and my children had to ask me the hard questions of, you know, why did you stay? You know, those just very blatantly obvious questions to everybody else. And I love the one thing that Tina Turner said, I think it was in an interview with Gail King, and there's when you love somebody for the right reasons and they're very well behaved. She said when she was writing her memoir, it made her really love that part of Ike again, that was like the good Ike, and that you mourn that person. You mourn, like, you know, there's a little bit of that in there. And that's what the craziness is. And she said, and I was so glad she said it because it was so validating to me. She said, you know, he was good for 3 years. I've often said that. He was good for like 2.5 years, you know, and they are good at that. It's part of the MO. And you just don't understand it until you're in it. Well, you don't understand it when you're in it. It's when you get out of it. Like you can take all of these kind of the rote responses and questions everybody asks. Why did it take her so long to report it? Why did, you know, why didn't you just leave? All of those things are just so complex.
They are.
You know, I just feel that
I remember I'm trying to think, but I'm thinking back now, and there was another guest on our program who had, I can't remember her name now, she worked in the apothecary place. She was always selling magic I don't know, potions or something. Can't remember her name now. Anyway, the tonic shop.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that nice?
She had, I
think, a history with who you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, I pray for healing. I pray for I want my abuser to heal so no one goes through what I have gone through. And you know, I want anybody, you know, that is in the circle, our spiritual circle, to be safe and to be okay. And I have, you know, shared my story now on this podcast. Mm-hmm. I have shared it intimately with, you know, a few people, but my spiritual community has been such an integral part of this. And it's made me a believer again. Like I said, Pastor Wendy knocking on my door and just knowing something was wrong, needing to say to me, this is very awkward. I know we don't know each other, but I feel like you might need to reach out.
She reached out to you. That was, you know, we got COVID. We don't know that we got COVID on the same day that you did, but it was very close. Okay. Uh-huh. And we didn't know for sure that it was COVID, except it was a really, really bad cold and fever that lasted 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And both got it. Okay. But we didn't go get, West Virginia didn't do any of the things that I can't remember. Did they? I don't think they did, because I don't remember this story of, you know, you're quarantined and the fire department going by your house.
Oh, it's wild. I have a file in my file box that is my COVID file. It's COVID Delaware is what I've labeled it. And it's all the correspondences. I mean, they were so on top of things. It was a little frightening, you know, obviously, but I found that they just became, I mean, there was not a day that went by that they didn't call. They called on Easter. They called on Mother's Day.
That's really good, actually.
Yeah.
No, we didn't have, I mean, I think justice finally got to encouraging people to get the shots. Okay.
He uh-huh. didn't.
But he pocketed half the federal money.
Right.
Unbelievable, you know. I mean, just, oh well, you know, we can cut state income tax. Matter of fact, we can get rid of the income tax altogether now. You know, we have plenty of money. Who get? Well, the federal government gave it to. I got it in my pocket here. You know, we're going to hold it for a rainy day. We use it to what? It just the absolute. I don't give me the air. It's just. taking all that money and then using it to cut corporate and rich taxes. I mean, you talk about things that ought to be criminalized.
Right. I know. It's across the board. In any topic we bring up, we could...
illegal.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it is illegal, but I mean, it's like... it's like I was talking to my friend, Garrett Moran, who was a Quaker at one point, and I guess he still is. Anyway, he had a job. He really believed that in Dr. You know, remember Dr. Aldous in our area about being a believer in medically assisted a treatment of opioid, you know, Suboxone and all these other, because you, rather than the cold turkey prison solution. he got a job with the state, you know, and did studies with West Virginia University. They all got a bunch of experts together. Yeah, it would make a great difference in the state. Some little bill got passed that said, yeah, that's a good idea, but never a dime of money was appropriated to do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So even though you could pass a law, but if you don't fund any remedies, you know, I mean, like for example, suppose you cheat somebody out of wages at McDonald's, as if that would ever happen. suppose you cheat somebody out of the wages, like you promise them a vacation, but they never get it. Okay. You're told there's a 2-week vacation, but you. They fire you. They don't. After you never get any vacation, and that's against the law. However, there's no punishment for breaking it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The only thing lawyers can do, you know, for you in that case, is they can threaten to sue the company, even though there's no actual penalty like prison or fine or something like that written into the statute. You can sue them under that law, and the only damage they'll receive is the publicity, because you publicized in the newspaper that McDonald's cheats people out of their money. Not so many people will go to work there.
Right.
Theory. Okay. And in order to avoid that, the companies tend to pay on the condition you don't tell anybody about the settlement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the crime persists, and there's a little payoff once in a while when they get caught. But other than that, nothing. And it's a little bit true with domestic violence. I mean, it's illegal.
Right.
But try to get it enforced. And it takes somebody has to go through hell to get it done. I mean, look at the woman that testified against Trump.
Exactly. I mean, I was going to bring that up. You know, why did it take you so long? You know, all of those standard questions that get thrown at you. Because guess what? Healing from this stuff takes a long time. You know, it took me a long time to come home to Shepherdstown. I was scared to come home. You know, I lived in my car. I lived on the road. I moved in with a daughter that was living in Virginia. You know, I was avoiding what I needed most, which was home. You know, it's a long journey. And like I said, there's constantly something that will trigger you. You know, my password book, Get Out Alive 2020, you know, and it just threw me back. I literally, right in that moment when I read it, I remember what happened that day and how just completely strung out I was.
Do you know any other countries? That's a question I should just answer by doing some research myself, where the results or the judicial system or the intervention works better, is more credible. I just don't know.
I don't know either. And it is something I'd like to, Stella's telling me I have to end my podcast because she has to go out.
It's time to go out. I'm surprised Lukey's not here doing the same thing to me. Yeah.
But okay, Stella, I am going to invite someone to join us sometime. And it is the founder of Thistle Farm in Nashville. And I was able to go on a retreat there after my... after I escaped, and she has a great model that does work. So we'll visit with her.
No, just do that. By the way, I did send a note to GT.
I'm coming, Stella.
I don't know when he's going to respond, but I did send a note to GT.
Okay, good. Good.
All right. Well, as soon as Karen takes care of her puppy.
I feel good. I know it's not like a celebratory topic, but in a way it is. And I do want it to be celebrated, because being able to tell your story is it's part of celebrating my healing. I didn't know I'd ever be to this place. So it's okay. It's all good. And I want everyone to have a wonderful day and a wonderful Memorial Day weekend.
Yes, well, you should honor those who have laid down their lives for the country and use that to build a better country.
Absolutely. Amen to that. Thank you, John.
All right. Take care. Everybody take care of each other. It's late, but everything comes next.